the climb, and the exertion of using her telekinesis to carry 8's body for so long. I set down the chest I've been carrying and flex my fingers. Adam stands with his hands on his hips and gazes out over the temple's edge. "Some view," he says. "It's beautiful," I agree. At the temple's pinnacle, we are above the treetops. It's possible to see beyond the overgrown trees that crowd the pyramid, beyond the stripped ring of land the Moogs cleared, and out to the rest of the Mayan ruins and the thriving jungle beyond. I imagine some old Mayan ruler standing up here and gazing out at his domain. And then, I imagine that same ruler turning his eyes to the heavens as a Lorik ship descends from the clouds. The image seems so real and vivid, I get the strange feeling that my imagination didn't just conjure it up. Centuries ago, something like that really happened here. The Lorik visited, and the sanctuary remembers. "You guys, look at this," Marina calls to us. Adam and I turn away from the view and walk across the flat roof of the temple. At the centermost point is a stone door. At first, I think the door is carved from the same pale stone as the rest of the pyramid, but as I draw closer, it becomes obvious that the door is smooth and unblemished, the ivory-colored material not showing the same effects of age as the rest of the temple. The door may have been here for some time, yet it's apparent that it was plunked down on top of the already built pyramid. The door doesn't lead anywhere, a fact Marina demonstrates by walking in a circle around it. Her floating pendant hovers in front of the door, waiting for us to catch up. I stop in front of the door and examine its surface. It is completely smooth. No handles, knobs, or anything like that, with the exception of 9 round divots arranged in a circle at the door's center. "The pendants," I say, brushing my fingers over cool stone. Marina plucks her pendant out of the air and guides the stone into one of the notches. It fits perfectly and emits a crisp clicking sound. The door doesn't move, though. "We only have 3, I say, grimacing. "It isn't enough." "We have to try," Marina says, already pulling off her remaining pendant. She's right. We've come too far to turn back now. I pull off John's pendant and fit it into the notches on the stone door. "Here goes nothing," I say, as I push the final pendant home. Immediately, the laurelite stones begin to glow with the same energy as the force field. The glow spreads between the stones, connecting them, the energy filling the gaps where we're missing pendants. The circular symbol that takes shape on the door reminds me of the scars we get on our legs when one of the guard dies. And then, with an ancient grinding noise, the stone door slides down into the temple, leaving behind only a thin frame. Instead of jungle through the doorframe, I see a dusty room lit by the dim blue glow of laurelite. "I thought we'd need more," I say. "We don't even have a majority." "Or maybe the sanctuary knows how badly we need to enter," Marina suggests. "It's some kind of portal," Adam says, squinting into the room beyond the doorframe. "Is that inside the temple?" "Let's find out," I say. I pick up Marina's chest and step over the threshold. Immediately, I get that disorienting, end-over-end roller coaster feeling that I used to have whenever 8 would use his teleportation legacy. It only lasts a second, and then I'm blinking my eyes to adjust to the dimmer lighting of this inner sanctum. My ears pop from the pressure change, and I get the sense that I just stepped through a portal into the middle of the Mayan temple. Or maybe, considering the way the jungle sounds have been completely sealed out, we're even deeper than that. Maybe this sanctuary is completely beneath the pyramid. Marina, with 8's body in tow, and Adam follow me through, the both of them squinting to adjust to the lower light. When they're on the other side, the doorway blinks out of existence. There's no exit in its place, only a solid limestone wall, although a circle of notches just like the one from the door are carved into it. Our pendants clatter to the floor, and I hurriedly pick them up. "The sanctuary," Marina breathes. "How long ago did your people put this here?" Adam asks. "Hell if I know. We heard they'd been coming to Earth for centuries," I reply absently, peering around. "I guess this is what they were doing." "They were preparing for this day," Marina adds, that eerie certainty back in her voice. "What did they leave us, though?" I ask, a little disappointed as I look around. "An empty room?" The sanctuary is one long, rectangular room with high ceilings and absolutely no doors or windows. It's as if our ancestors teleported into a solid chunk of rock, somehow managed to carve out a room, and then forgot to furnish it. There's nothing here. Veins of glowing laurelite are threaded through the stone walls and ceiling in chaotic patterns that cast the entire room in a cobalt hue. My eyes glide over the swoops and swirls of laurelite. There's something vaguely familiar there. Something that I'm just not seeing. "It's the universe," Adam says. "It's more than we even know about. The Mogadorian star maps don't cover this much." It takes me a moment to realize what he's saying. But then I notice the way the laurelite veins pool into circles at some spots, and I recognize the other veins as the swirling stars of the cosmos and beyond. It's just like the macrocosms, only way bigger, and covering way more universe. I find Lorien on one wall, the glowing puddle of laurelite at its heart shining much dimmer than some other spots. "Our home," I say, and touch Lorien gently with my finger. A chill goes through me as the laurelite seems to pulse in answer, almost as if it recognizes me. "My home," Adam says dryly. He points to an area that's notable only for its complete absence of laurelite, like a void existing in the glowing universe. He frowns. "At least your ancestors got the whole forbidding darkness thing right." "Those aren't our homes. Not anymore," Marina says, tracing her fingers across the wall, following the exact trajectory our ship took from Lorien to Earth. "This is our home now." The laurelite outline of Earth glows much stronger than any other section of the wall. Marina presses her fingers against it, and the laurelite crackles and vibrates. Something below us is moving. Dust and dirt shake loose from the ceiling, the motes sparkling in the suddenly hypercharged light of the laurelite. I know I shouldn't be scared. This is a lauric place. It won't hurt us. But I can't help backing up to the nearest wall. The sanctuary suddenly feeling very claustrophobic now that it's shaking around me. Adam stumbles in next to me, his eyes wide. With an ancient groan and a grinding of stone, a circular section of the floor at the room's center rises up. It's like an altar or a pedestal extending up from the floor. The room stops shaking when the thing has risen to about waist high. This new extension is made from pure laurelite. The slab of plain limestone floor sits atop the laurelite cylinder, almost like a seal holding in whatever might be down below. Cautiously, the three of us approach. "It looks like this piece comes off," I say, touching the limestone seal, but not yet removing it. "It almost looks like a well," Adam says, musing. "What do you think is down there?" "No clue," I reply.
"Look," Marina says. "The drawings."
I see them. They're similar to the cave paintings that Eight showed us back in India, except these are carved directly into the well's laurelite sides. I have to walk a circle around the well to take all the images in. 9 silhouettes looming over a planet that looks like Earth. with 9 smaller silhouettes standing on the planet below them. A person, I can't tell if it's a male or female, standing in front of a hole in the ground and dumping the contents of a box into the opening. 9 silhouettes again, this time arranged in front of a castle, fending off something that looks like a tidal wave, or maybe a 3-headed dragon. More prophecies? I ask.
Maybe, Marina replies.
She has paused in front of the carving of the person with the box.
Or maybe they're instructions.
I stand next to her. Do you think this is the place where we commit our inheritances to the earth? Marina nods. She sets 8's body gently down to the ground, then uses her telekinesis to push the slab of limestone that seals the well aside. It crumbles onto the ground with a huge thud, the old stone instantly breaking apart. A column of pure blue light flows up from the well, so bright that I have to shield my eyes. It's like a spotlight. I can feel the warmth from the light deep in my bones. This is... Adam trails off, unable to complete his thought. There's profound amazement in his dark, Mogadorian eyes. Marina kneels down in front of her chest and opens it up. She cups her hands and removes a handful of Loric gemstones, then drops them into the sanctuary's well. They glitter and flash as they slip through her fingers, falling into the light. In response, the whole room seems to get a little brighter. The lorelite veins in the walls pulse stronger.
"Help me, Six," Marina says excitedly.
I grab the pouch of soil from the chest, open it up, and dump the contents down the well. A fragrant, greenhouse-like aroma fills the dusty chamber, and the light grows stronger still. Marina follows the soil with the bundle of dried branches and leaves. In that moment before they leave her hand, while they're bathed in the light, I could swear the branches look green and alive again. As they drop out of sight, a swirling breeze fills the chamber, cooling us down. "It's working," I say, even though I'm not sure what exactly we're doing. I'm only sure that it feels right. When we've emptied out the chest of everything else, I pick up the can of Henri's ashes. Carefully, I remove the lid and empty it into the light. Each of the ashes briefly sparks as they swirl downward into the well. I wish John could have been here to see this. I turn back to Marina, inclining my head gently towards where 8's body rests on the ground. Should we? Marina shakes her head, looking down at 8.
I'm not ready yet, 6.
I take a moment to sweep my gaze over the room, checking to see if anything's changed. The light from the well is nearly as bright as the sun, but it doesn't really hurt my eyes anymore. The lorelite veins in the walls pulse with energy. Our chest is empty, and Henri's ashes have been spread. There's nothing else to do, I say to Marina. It's time.
The pendants, 6, Marina says. We have to give it the pendants.
Hold on, Adam says, stepping forward for the first time. He's been watching all this take place with awe, but Marina's words snap him back. If you drop those pendants down there, we'll have no way out of here. I'm still holding all of our pendants. I clutch them tightly as I think it over. We have to have faith, right? I say, shrugging my shoulders. We have to trust that whatever's down there, whatever the elders left for us, that it'll show us a way out. Marina nods.
Yes.
Adam looks at me for a moment, then to the light. Everything he's seen today must go against his Mogadorian instincts. But he has guard in him, too. All right, Adam says. I trust you. I hold on to the pendants for a moment longer. I've worn an amulet around my neck for most of my life. There were many times that it reminded me who I was, where I was from, and what I was fighting for.
It was heartbreaking to lose two pendants, and I've never felt right without one. It's as much a part of who I am, who we all are, as the scars on our ankles. But it's time to let that go. I drop the three pendants into the well. The response is immediate and blinding. The light from within the well goes supernova. I shout and shield my eyes, and I'm pretty sure Marina and Adam do the same. There is a whooshing sound from down below, like thousands of wings taking flight, or a miniature tornado touching down beneath the earth. There is a loud, baritone thump that sends vibrations through my teeth. A few seconds later, the sound repeats. Thump, 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 thump. The rhythm gets faster and stronger, steadier. It's a heartbeat. I'm not sure how long I'm bathed in that pure blue light, how long I listen to the sonorous heartbeat of Lorien. It could be 2 minutes, or it could be 2 hours. The experience is hypnotic and comforting. When the light begins to die down, and the volume of the heartbeat lowers to a steady thrum in the background, I almost miss it. It's like waking up from a warm dream that you don't want to leave. I open my eyes and immediately gasp. 8's body hovers upright over the sanctuary's well, the column of blue light surrounding him. I snatch at Marina's hand. "Are you doing this?" I ask, unintentionally shouting. Marina shakes her head and squeezes my hand. There are tears in her eyes. A few steps behind us, Adam is on his knees. He must have collapsed during the light show. He looks up at 8, completely mystified. "What's happening? What is this?"
"Look at him," Marina says.
"Look." I'm about to tell Adam I have no idea what's going on, when I see 8's fingers move. Was it just a trick of the light? No, Marina must have seen it too, because she makes a little squeaking sound and covers her mouth with her free hand, her other squeezing down hard on mine. 8 wiggles his fingers. Floating, he shakes out his arms and legs. He rolls his head as if working out a crick in his neck. Then he opens his eyes. They are pure Lorelite. 8's eyes glow the same cobalt shade as the deepest veins in the wall. When he opens his mouth, blue light comes flooding out.
"Hello,"
8 says, in an echoing voice that doesn't belong to our friend. It's a melodic, beautiful voice, like nothing I've ever heard before. It is the voice of Lorien.
Chapter 26. Most people have the sense to run. These New Yorkers have seen enough movies to know what happens when an alien spaceship parks itself over your city. They stream down the sidewalk in droves. Some even abandon their cars in the middle of the avenues, which makes it slow going for our convoy of black SUVs. Luckily, outside Sanderson's hotel, Agent Walker was able to convince the local cops who showed up in response to the shooting to help us. When it comes to alien invasions, I guess there's something about a federal agent in a black suit and sunglasses. Even with the added sirens and flashers of the NYPD, it's hard cutting through the city, through the chaos. And yet, some people aren't running away from the East River, where the Mogadorian warship hovers ominously over the United Nations. They're running towards it. People with their phones out, recording, eager to catch a glimpse of alien life. I can't make up my mind if they're brave, crazy, or just stupid. Probably a combination of the three. I want to shout out the window for them to turn and run, but there's no time. I won't be able to save all of them. "Michael Worthington, a senator representing Florida." Agent Walker barks the name into her cell phone, reading it off a yellow legal pad. She's in the passenger seat, looking harried and wild.